Well, I've been widowed for a while now, and I've gone on a number of online dates, and most of them have been great guys, just not the one. So this man contacted me, and he sounded like Mr. Perfect on paper. He was good-looking. He was 5'11", a good height, and he believed in miracles like I do. And he had ministered abroad and in conferences. And he called me and he said, "We have a lot in common. And I really would like to meet you." And so when he called on the phone, there was no sense of humor. And it didn't seem like we interacted. So I didn't feel he was Mr. Right at all. And then my daughter says, "Well, you can't just tell by one phone call." And he was a pilot and a minister. And it's hard to find a minister my age that's good looking and, you know, and reasonably good physical condition without health issues. So he lived in Alabama, and he was flying to San Diego to pick up an airplane to buy for his son, but they had to do some mechanical things, so he had to stay there, and he couldn't meet me part way, and he couldn't fly to where I was because of time limitations. So he wanted me to drive all that way, and I already felt he wasn't Mr. Right, and I didn't want to drive that distance. But when I prayed, I felt I was supposed to, and my daughter was urging me to, and some friends were. So, okay. So he said, "I only contact people when I think there's a possibility they're my future wife." And so he wanted me to get there Tuesday. And I had some previous appointment engagements, so I was going to get there Wednesday night. But it turned out I would leave too late. So to go that distance would be 8 or 9 hours. So I decided to wait and leave at 5:30 and see him the next day. So I'd made arrangements to stay overnight at my friend Howard's place. And Howard is someone I met online. He sounded like Mr. Perfect on paper, very handsome. He was also a minister. But he didn't have much sense of humor either. But he wanted me to see his home, and he gave me, paid for my Amtrak ticket, $89. So I thought, gee, that's really nice, because he thought we should be married and I get to see his home. Unfortunately, I fell more in love with the tall waterfall that he built on this property than with Howard. But Howard's really nice, and we stayed friends. So I was staying with him. And then it was 10 o'clock at night. I'm on the freeway, busy, not too bad traffic, chewing on a dried slice of mango, and I broke my tooth. So I'm toothless. And then, so before I would have been devastated, and I wouldn't have stuck my face out the door, and I wouldn't have looked at Howard without covering my mouth, but now I think it's funny. So I couldn't get an appointment with a dentist the next day, and the girl told me to use toothpaste. So toothpaste works. It did for 2 days. So I called Roger and asked, "Would you swing by and pick me up? I'm 23 miles away." He says, "No." I said, "I traveled, you know, 435 miles, and you can't drive 23 miles? He said, "No, I don't know the area." Well, I don't know the area. So, okay, I'll be at your hotel at 1:30 for lunch. I go there. He's not even in the lobby waiting. And so I thought, this guy likes to be catered to. You know, so he wants me to wait while they call him, and then he comes down. So I got to talking to this desk clerk. She's really nice. She asked what I did. I told her I'm an author, so she wanted to ask about my book, and I was showing it to her, and we were talking. And I heard the door open and close, and I didn't turn around right away because I was finishing what I was saying to her. I turn, he's still across the room at the door with this look on his face. And so so we greet each other, and we're walking to my car. And he didn't offer to use his car because he's probably saving gas money or something. So I hand him the keys to my car. And normally on online dating, you don't do this. I mean, you meet at a restaurant. You don't drive off with somebody. But I read up on him, and he is, you know, this well-known minister. So we're walking to the car, and he says, "Where are we going?" I stop. "You don't know where we're going. You know, you have 5 days to plan." And he's saying, "You know, I think you're the woman. Why don't you come Tuesday instead of Thursday?" And he hasn't even planned on a place. So he says, "Well, there's lots of restaurants on the way to the airport and back I've passed." So we get in the car. I said, "Oh, are you adventurous with food?" "No. Beef and potatoes." I thought, "Oh." And I said, "Well, that must make it difficult because you travel abroad." He says, "No." I tell him, "Beef and potato is what I want, and beef and potato is what I get." And I says, "Okay." So we're driving, and he says, "Do you want to go to Coco's?" I says, "No, I don't want to go to Coco's after driving all this way." I says, "I don't want to go to a place that I can go to at home," which is a nice way of paying you, cheapskate. So then we're driving, and I said, "Oh, do you ever eat Italian?" "Occasionally." "Would you like to eat there?" And he says, "But I don't want to today because I stay on this regimen, and I never have to diet. If I have my meat and potatoes, I don't eat pasta very often." I said, "Would you like to make an..." After we drove around a while, "Would you like to make an exception today?" "No." "All right." So we decide we're going to eat a Chinese buffet. And so we get our plates, and he looks at mine and sniffs. "I would not eat anything that you have on your plate." I says, "Well, I'd like to try things I don't get at home, so I'm going to enjoy this." So he's sitting there, and so I'm just talking. No interaction. Usually people go, "Uh-huh, uh-huh." And I'm realizing he hasn't said one thing positive or encouraging. And I said, "There's no interaction here." He says, "Well, I've learned not to speak unless I have something significant to say." I says, "Oh, okay. Why don't you tell me about one of your adventures?" So this was good because he moved in miracles like my husband did. And he said he was going to go to Estonia. He knew God wanted him to go to Estonia without a translator and without any contacts. And so he got there in the airport. Nobody speaks English. And so they direct him to the hotel that tourists go to. And later he found out they're bugged. So, because they want to know your the reason that you're there. And the room is very sparse, just a bed, very small room. So he was praying, like, what am I to do, Lord? And 2:30 at night, he felt like he was supposed to go to the post office that he had passed. And it was freezing cold, snowing, and he bundled up and walked to the post office. And there was a 14-year-old boy who spoke perfect Russian and perfect English. And he asked, "What are you doing in my country?" And he said, God sent me." So the boy was a Christian, and he was going to be his translator. And he took him back to the hotel. I don't know if the boy was homeless, but Nick slept on the cement floor, and Roger gave him his blanket. And the next day, he says, "What are we going to do?" He says, "We're going to pray." And then he heard the name of that he never heard before. And it turned out to be a town not too far away. And they found a taxi driver who knew the town very well. And Roger told him, "Drink and go to the bathroom because you're going to stay in the car all day, but I will pay you more than you've ever received in your life." So as they're going there, he says, "Do you know of any Christian, any house churches. He says, there's a house. I see lots of people coming and going. He says, take me there. And he goes there and brings a translator inside, and one man is there. He says, we've been waiting for you. And he said, it was just like a movie. You press a button, the door opens, and it's a room full of people, and it's a hidden house church. And they had services at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it lasted for 3 hours, and they started to leave, and God told him to wait. And they didn't know who or what they were waiting for, but it was Roger. So that excited me, because that's how God moved with my husband, and he moves with me sometimes. So then he told that story, and he started on the North story right away. And I said, excuse me, I have to interrupt, because usually there's interaction, and I'd like to make some comments. Go ahead. So, you know, I think the topic is divine appointments. So I tell him about one of my divine appointments. No reaction, no encouragement, nothing. So I said, after I finished, I offended you. He says, no. I said, well, you're not talking. Well, I found it's wise not to say anything unless you have any something significant to say. I said, you told me that 4 times, 2 on the phone and 2 here. And I'm getting really teed off. And then, so it turns out, he says, you were rude. The reason he was looking upset was because I didn't turn around and treat him like deity with a greeting, I guess. And he said, I was talking to this woman about my book, and she wasn't interested in my book, and I was pushing it on her, and that she was not interested, and she was uncomfortable. I said, she was interested. She was asking me questions. She wasn't interested. I can read people. So we didn't part very happily, and then, but I said, God, teach me what you want to teach me and accomplish what you want to accomplish. I want to learn from this. So I realize I do not have love that is not easily offended. I do not have love that covers a multitude of Roger's sins. So I have to really work on myself. But I did call that desk clerk the next day, and I said, would you please tell me the truth? Were you interested in my book? And she was. And I told her what Roger said. She says, oh, no, the reason I was uncomfortable is the expression on his face, and he was still standing at the door impatient. And I didn't want you to get in trouble. So I did email and told Roger that, and he accused me of not telling the truth, this guy. So I am definitely moving on, but trying to learn love that is not easily offended.